It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper? A woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver. I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At chumbacasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited
by law. See terms and conditions 18+. It's time for today's Lucky Land horoscope with Victoria Cash.
Life's gotten mundane, so shake up the daily routine and be adventurous with a trip to Lucky Land. You know what they say, your chance to win starts with a spin. So go to LuckyLandSlots.com to play over 100 social casino-style games for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Get lucky today at LuckyLandSlots.com.
Available to players in the U.S., excluding Washington and Michigan. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18+. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to the Billboard.com Pop Shop Podcast. My name is Keith Caulfield, and I am the co-director of charts at Billboard. Joining me, as always, is the fabulous and gracious Billboard.com senior editor, Katie Atkinson.
I wanted more adjectives.
I was trying to think of another one, and I just sort of drew a blank.
Still a little husky over here. You could have gone with husky.
The fabulous Kathleen Turner Atkinson.
As I'm choking.
As she chokes. Well,
grab my water. Don't worry, guys.
Well, the Billboard Pop Shop Podcast is your one-stop shop for all things pop on Billboard's weekly charts. In addition, you can always count on a lively discussion about the week's big pop news, fun chart stats and stories, and guest interviews with music stars and folks from the world of pop. This week on the show, we've got news on Drake's new More Life album and how it's heading for number one next week, the blockbuster arrival of the Beauty and the Beast film and its soundtrack, how the music world reacted to the death of rock icon Chuck Berry, and how Nicki Minaj sets a new record on the Billboard Hot 100 chart. Plus, we've got an interview with singer-songwriter James Blunt. He recently dropped by to talk about his new album, The After Love, working with his pal Ed Sheeran on the set, who he also happens to be touring with this summer, and his perhaps surprising relationship with the late Carrie Fisher. So stick around for our chat later on in the show. But first, before we get started, if you enjoy the podcast, subscribe. Just do it. Why don't you? It's just easier than trying to find us each week on the website.
True.
And waiting for a tweet. And I mean, wouldn't it just be easier? And you can also just, you know, give us a review if you want on iTunes. And if you want to, you know, ask us a question, you can do so on Twitter. I'm Keith_Caulfield and Katie is just KT Atkinson. And of course, if you want to explore more podcasts from Billboard, visit iTunes.com/Billboard Podcasts. Well, Katie, let's hit three of the biggest music headlines this week over on Billboard.com, and you should know since you are a senior editor of the website.
This is true. I have to read everything that goes on that thing, so
wow.
First one, of course, is Drake releasing More Life. His playlist is finally here after first announcing the project back in October. It debuted on Saturday on Drake's OVO Sound radio show on Beats One.
I was listening.
You were listening live?
I had never listened to OVO Sound before, and I actually was listening live.
Wow.
Because I wanted to see how this thing rolled out.
I'm guessing you and many other people who might never have listened before tuned
in. I think
so,
yeah.
There are 22 brand new Drake songs for fans to digest, and 19 of those 22 songs hit the Billboard plus Twitter trending 140 chart the day the album came out. And shortly after its release, Drake even had every song in the chart's top 10.
Yeah.
There's obviously lots of chart news to break down with
yes.
this one. So, Keith, what does it look like? Do we have some early chart numbers already?
Yeah, we do. We do. The industry forecasters suggest the album could earn somewhere in the range of 500,000 to 550,000 equivalent album units in the week ending March 23rd. And that would be the biggest week for any album since Drake's own Views album last May when it did a little over a million units. Interestingly enough, and that means it'll be number one on the Billboard 200, which would give Drake his seventh number one album and his seventh number one in a row and his seventh album to debut at number one. Mm. It's good to be Drake. Interesting thing about this is that the album will likely set the record for the most streams generated for an album's songs in a single week. Because The album is selling well, but not incredibly well. It's going to do like maybe 200 to 250,000 in traditional album sales.
Right.
The rest, for the most part, the bulk of that will be streams, which isn't terribly surprising. He's kind of billed this as a playlist, but it's still an album. You can stream it as an album. It's about 81 minutes. You can buy it as an album. And it's coming out on physical CD and vinyl in a week or two.
Mm-hmm.
So this effectively is an album. But it's a huge moment for streaming services. And he already broke a bunch of one-day Apple and Spotify records in terms of the most streams generated for an album songs. He already broke both of those records. I believe both were on, I want to say, Sunday, the day after the album came out, because the album came out on Saturday. So all these records were set on Sunday. So yeah, it's just a huge week, and that's just preliminary numbers. The numbers could get bigger or get more focused as the days move on.
And I know we were wondering, when it was billed a playlist, how many songs might be on it. And yeah, obviously it's longish song-wise for an album,
right,
but time-wise it's pretty much a traditional album length.
Because, I mean, you can fit about 80, 81, 82 if you're really pushing it
right
on a CD, and this album is, I think it's 81 minutes.
Yeah.
And there's 22 tracks, two of which are interludes, mm-hmm, but they're kind of like songs. Mm-hmm. They're just like 1.5 minute interludes. But for the rest of it, it's like basically, it's music.
Except for when Drake is sampling himself in his own AMA's speech from November.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I missed that one.
Throughout the it's different songs, I think, throughout the playlist. He's telling people to like keep his name out their mouth. In his AMA speech.
Oh, that was the AMA speech mm-hmm. he was sampling. I kept wondering because I heard that a couple times. I'm like, where is this coming from?
I really love sampling your own voice. That makes me laugh.
Well, you give yourself permission.
It's true. Yeah. That's right. He's like, do you clear the strike? I clear it.
Yeah.
Okay, should we move on to the next headline?
Yeah, that was also one of my biggest... that's a preview of Chart Chat.
I don't like to step on your Chart Chat toes, but...
You know, sometimes we collude.
Sometimes they overlap.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, our next bit of news is very sad. Rock and roll pioneer Chuck Berry died on Saturday at age 90. The singer, songwriter, and guitar great was best known for his early rock hits Johnny B. Good, Roll Over Beethoven, Maybelline, No Particular Place to Go, and his one and only Billboard Hot 100 number one, My Ding-a-ling.
I mean, really?
I bet you weren't going to guess that.
My Ding-a-ling.
I should have given it a pause there. Let people think.
It's just...
They're like, wait, didn't she already say Johnny B. Good? Obviously, he had a ton of very memorable songs throughout his career. And remembrances poured in over the weekend, including from Paul McCartney, whose group, the Beatles, obviously were hugely influenced by Chuck Berry and even, you know, covered many of his works when they were first starting out. And McCartney said on Twitter, he was one of rock and roll's greatest poets. He will be missed, but remembered by everyone who ever loved rock and roll.
Yeah, I was looking at all of the tweets and the posts that were coming through. I think all of the Rolling Stones that are on Twitter had remembrances. The Rolling Stones' very first single was a cover of Chuck Berry. It's just, rock and roll as you know it today was basically formed or helped formed by Chuck Berry.
Any rock band that you love was either influenced by Chuck Berry directly or influenced by a group influenced by Chuck Berry.
Yeah.
There's just zero question.
And even if you don't think that you are incredibly familiar with Chuck Berry,
you actually
know his music. And even if you've just watched Back to the Future.
Sure.
You're now familiar with Chuck Berry.
Yeah, I mean, for an artist whose biggest hits came in the 1950s, I think that
people
today... Before the Hot
100 even existed.
Yeah, that people today have a lot of familiarity with his songs. And, I mean, I mentioned... I mean, it's obviously like a super fun, jokey song, but Run Rudolph, if you watch Home Alone, they're running through the airport. That's the song. Like, you know, so everybody knows a Chuck Berry song.
Yeah.
For sure.
By the way,
yes.
I don't have a forecast yet, but it looks like there's a greatest hits album of his that's doing particularly well on iTunes. I believe it's called The Definitive Chuck Berry. It's like a 30-track collection. It's a fairly large collection. I don't have a forecast yet, but... I'm assuming that it's going to probably come back or possibly just debut on the Billboard 200, which would give him his first charting album in a couple years. I think he was on the chart, I think, in 2012. But stay tuned to .com, well, Billboard.com, for news on Chuck Berry's possible chart impact next week.
Well, and he happened to be working on new music.
That's right.
And a new album, and his family plans to move forward with it. I believe June is what they're thinking for a release date, which is what they were thinking before he passed away. Mm. And it would be his first new studio album in 40 years. So, yeah.
Just 40.
Just 4 decades.
Wow.
And he was still performing. Like, he had a regular gig at, like, the club down the street from where he lived, and he was, like, still actively performing.
Wow.
So, you know, RIP to Chuck Berry. Much happier news for our final headline. Beauty and the Beast, the live-action Disney movie, hit theaters over the weekend, and it earned the 7th biggest box office opening of all time and the best ever for a PG-rated film. So right out the gate, setting records. It earned $170 million in the U.S. and $350 million globally. So apparently the calls to boycott Disney due to the film's quote-unquote gay moment didn't have much of an impact after all.
Now, is the 7th biggest box office opening, is that for the $170 million or the $350?
That's for actually both. It's, yeah, it's set both U.S. and global records, but the 7th is domestic.
Hmm.
That 7th, yeah.
Also... So the 7th is
for the U.S. number.
It's for the U.S. number. Also notable to point out, whenever people talk about box office numbers in America, that is usually almost always referring to U.S. and Canada numbers, believe it or not.
So maybe I should have said North American.
Nope.
Because
that counts Mexico.
Oh, look at that.
But we don't have that in our box office numbers.
Interesting.
Yeah, I know. Most people wouldn't realize that.
I feel like you also have some Beauty and the Beast stats for us on the soundtrack.
I do. We can actually transition over to my chart chat.
Chart chat time.
Chart chat. Speaking of all those beastly stats, let's run the Billboard chart numbers and do the chart chat dance. Or perhaps a waltz of some sort.
Yes.
I'll be
Beast. Our guest.
You be Belle. While Ed Sheeran's Divide album remains at number one on the Billboard 200 albums chart this week, the Beauty and the Beast soundtrack debuts at number 3. It's the highest debut of the week and actually the only album to debut inside the top 10. It earned 57,000 equivalent album units in the week ending March 16th, and 48,000 of those were in traditional album sales. Of course, these figures are according to Nielsen Music. The Beauty and the Beast soundtrack beats out the number 19 peak of the original 1991 animated film soundtrack because of course, the new live-action movie is based on the animated version from 1991. Mind you, the new album's numbers were racked up before the movie came out on March 17th. So we could see the album hold on handsomely in its second week on the charts as it basks in the glow of the movie's blockbuster premiere, but then again, maybe it won't. Who knows? We'll find out.
It probably will. It seems to be doing well.
The second, you know, the number two thing on my list is wanting to talk about Drake, but we kind of covered most of Drake already. But stay tuned for more possible record-breaking statistics throughout the week on
.com. Next week, we'll really get into Drake.
I mean, who knows how many of the tracks from the album could end up on the Hot 100. Drake has a tendency to have the entire album show up.
Mm-hmm.
And also, a lot of the album is very catchy and kind of poppy. I was surprised
Billboard
by that.
Called it yacht rap.
Really? Wow.
Kind of like, you know, Drake's reached that level of success where he just kind of talks about, you know, being on boats and... living the life.
When you get to a certain point, it's like, what is there left to
complain about?
Yeah. When you get to like sort of like Jay-Z, like Drake status.
Yacht rap.
Yeah. Well, our third and final note of the chart chat dance this week. Over on the Billboard Hot 100 songs chart, Ed Sheeran's Shape of You is number one for an 8th week. But farther down the chart, there's some Divalicious action as Nicki Minaj beats Aretha Franklin for the most Hot 100 hits ever among women. Nicki's 3 new songs all debut on the chart, giving her a total of 76 hits, which beats Aretha's 73. Nicki's No Frauds with Drake and Lil Wayne debuts at number 14. Regret in Your Tears, which is a solo track, debuts at number 61. And Changed It with Lil Wayne debuts at number 71. Now, Aretha has been the woman with the most hits on the Hot 100 for nearly 40 years.
Damn.
And it was in June of 1977 when she first achieved the record. She notched her 54th hit that month, beating the then record holder, Connie Francis. But watch out, Nikki. Taylor Swift is right behind you, as she has 70 Hot 100 hits, a number that is sure to grow as soon as Taylor drops her next album, as Taylor generally sees most of her album tracks reach the list, even if they aren't even official singles.
But knowing Nikki and her proclivity to release a trio of songs in a week,
yeah,
I don't know if she'll ever be catchable.
I think it's doable.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know.
You know? Because it's like if Taylor put her album out like in the fall, mm-hmm. which is typically Taylor time.
Possible. Taylor time.
Taylor time. I feel like a lot of Nikki songs will come out between now and the fall.
True. There'll be a lot of collaborations and features. Mm-hmm, yeah. Well, this will be something to look forward to.
Indeed.
It's funny. A lot of these crazy records are all, you know.
You think they're unbeatable.
You
and
think
then
they're unbeatable.
Look at what Nikki just did. 40 years. She just beat a 40-year record.
Well, after all that music news and chart chat, I think it is now time for our interview with James Blunt. The singer-songwriter recently stopped by the office to talk about his new album, The Afterlove, working with Ed Sheeran and Ryan Tedder on the set, and how he went into making this album not with an audience in mind and getting past a kind of pressure that he felt from the public following the huge success of his debut album and his number one Billboard Hot 100 hit, You're Beautiful. I thought it was kind of interesting. He actually talks about how he just kind of had this like moment of sort of revelation where he just went to this album kind of thinking, let's just not worry about stuff.
We don't need to make another number one hit.
Yeah.
Like, but then maybe that's what will give him another number one hit. You never know.
Hits come from the most strangest places. You never know. James also talks about his possibly surprising relationship with the late Carrie Fisher. Evidently he was incredibly great friends with her for a very long time. And his first album, as you'll find out if you didn't already know, his first album, Back to Bedlam, was named sort of in tribute to Carrie Fisher's house. Because so much crazy magic came from this place of Bedlam. So anyways, here's our chat with James Blunt. Welcome to the Billboard Pop Shop Podcast. James Blunt, how are you, sir?
Yeah, I'm really well. It's great to be back here in the States.
Well, thank you for stopping by to talk about your new music, specifically your new album, The Afterlove. You recently told us that you've been working on the album for about like 2 years, I think. Does it generally take you a while to, you know, write and record music for an album, or is it kind of like a quick process for you?
You know, it does normally take me a while. I tour for 18 months. I normally go home, wash my clothes, and then start about making an album. And normally I'd write 25 songs, record it over a space of maybe a year. And this one, actually, I've taken over 2 years to do. I've written over 100 songs and had an amazing experience doing it. I've worked with incredible people, like the likes of Ryan Tedder, the lead singer of One Republic, with Ed Sheeran, who you might have heard of, with a guy called Stefan Mokyo, who writes for The Weeknd, and a girl called Mazzella, who wrote Wrecking Ball by Miley Cyrus. And it's kind of been a dream team of people who, you know, who just like us, the level of excitement and energy and inspiration has made an album that is, for me, very different and really exciting.
When you say that you write 100 songs, how in the world do you possibly narrow that down to, you know, a track list of, you know, 12 or 15 songs?
Yeah, even less than that. I just go down to 10 for a 10-song album. You know, it's easy. They're just the best songs. I suppose the nice thing about having so many is that it just means that, you know, by the 9th and 10th song, you're not just squeezing on something that's only just got on that just good enough for an album. It means that this album, for me, is really, really solid, really exciting. It means that my record label are kind of jumping up and down saying, okay, you know, we've got lots of singles to choose from. I mean, it means that my friends are turning around and saying, hey, James, this is great. We don't have to lie to you anymore. We actually do like your music.
Does songwriting come easy to you? Is it something that just sort of flows out of you naturally? Or is it kind of something that is sort of challenging to you in a way?
I think like almost most musicians, I would say, you know, it changes depending on the weather and the day and what's been going on. Some days you feel inspired and others you don't. And of the two-year period, there were days when I didn't. But fortunately, there were masses of days where I thought, okay, I've got lots to write about. And yeah, you know, this has been, I've had four albums in the past, and it feels like there was kind of a different music career. And this feels like, you know, a whole new thing. I stopped after my last tour. I went to Australia for a while, and I came back and said, you know, I'm back in the music business, and in a way that I haven't been before, in a way that I'm really enjoying it.
What changed so dramatically between, you know, the previous albums and this album? Like, aside from taking a vacation, or if that wasn't a vacation, I apologize. What was the big change before this album?
Well, I suppose, you know, I was thinking about, you know, what has happened? Why is it? Does it feel different? I suppose I got married, had a kid. That might be something. And you know what? I think also having had those albums in the past and the fact they're all related to each other and a development from each other. And this just felt like, you know, I just wanted to do something not with an audience in mind anymore, just something for myself. And it just allowed me to write songs with a certain kind of confidence rather than a kind of an apology.
What was that something that sort of lingered in the previous albums where you kind of felt like you had to write, you know, a certain way or a certain kind of music, and you kind of had this realization like, look, I can just do this for myself? Was that something that existed for the first couple albums?
Yeah, definitely. My first album hit big. In America, my subsequent albums didn't really hit big. And so, you're always then thinking about, the public reaction and they're always in the room slightly. And so it's been nice to just get over that. Yeah, I just had to get over it. And again, it was working with certain people who've really helped me do that, with Ed Sheeran, who said, come on, I loved your first album because it was open in its lyrics, so let's not mess around and hint at things. Let's say something. And again, with Ryan Tedder, he said, you know what? You're known to be this earnest guy, but I know you to be anything but that. And so instead, we wrote songs with irony and humor. And so that's why my first single says the lines like, you know, saw you standing outside a bar, would have said you're beautiful, but I used that line before.
You talk about Ryan and Ed on the album, and you recently also told Billboard that you're a big One Republic groupie. What is it about Ryan Tedder and his music and his songwriting that really resonates with you and made you want to work with him?
Well, he and I have written with each other before. We're friends, and I really enjoy meeting up in random places, as we do, whether it be at the Corinthia Hotel in London to write this the first single off the album, Love Me Better, or whether I, you know, have jumped on a plane and met him in the middle of nowhere when he's on his tour. And, you know, for me, it's because he wants to do things differently. He wants to have fun with it. Particularly on this album, I really needed that. And so I had two ideas. We'd been knocking these ideas together, but I played them both to my record label. One sounded kind of like related to my other stuff, related to Damien Rice or David Gray and that kind of sound, and one sounded completely different. And they said, do the safe one, do the David Gray, Damien Rice type song. And I went back to Ryan and played them, and he said, hey, you know, hell, you know, let's get on that plane. I was in Venice. Get on that plane, fly to Amsterdam, drive to Rotterdam, meet me here. We'll have 3 hours, but we're going to do that other song because it sounds like Akon. and it sounds fun, and it sounds totally different from what you'd normally do, but it sounds unique.
And he was speaking specifically of Love Me Better, the first single?
No, it's a different song called Lose My Number.
Ah.
And it sounds awesome. And so it was and he just made it fun again. And you can really hear that all over this album. It's confident and it's bold and it's exciting.
You also collaborated with your friend Ed Sheeran on the album. He co-wrote, I think, at least two songs on the album, including one with Ryan, Time of Our Lives. Why did you want to work with Ed on the album? Because I don't think you've worked with Ed previously on previous albums, but feel free to correct me if I'm wrong.
I haven't ever written with Ed before until this album, but I've known him for a few years because we share a manager, really, a management firm. Elton John owns the management firm,
right?
Who look after us. And so that's how we met. We've always got on and we've messed around. And then this time around, he said, come on, let's get together. So we went to Switzerland to go skiing, and I taught him how to ski, and he taught me how to write songs.
Yeah, well, it's good when you can have like those friendships that are like professional friendships that are actually turned into sort of fruitful working relationships. And you can sort of hear his influence on Time of Our Lives, I think. It sounds a little bit like Ed, but it also sounds distinctly like you. And I think you can hear that throughout the songs that I've heard on the album, especially the songs.
Yeah.
Songs that sound a little bit different, but it's still very you.
Yeah, exactly. I think he just said, you know, come on, let's have that openness again. And so it's, you know, it really has been an education writing with him. He's a guy at the top of his game, but his feet firmly on the ground. And so it's I'm very lucky to have those moments of writing with him. And I have to say, Time of Our Lives was, again, as a moment, you know, that's a pretty amazing list of people to be writing with, Ed Sheeran and Ryan on the same song. I have to say that song was very much, you know, Ryan came in with this idea and both of us, Ed and I, you know, nodded and said, okay, this is absolutely stunning.
You know, I have to ask, as I'm sure a lot of people do, you know, 11 years ago, you broke through enormously with the number one Billboard Hot 100 hit, You're Beautiful. Back when things in the industry were very, very different, and now you're coming back with a new album, and so much has changed from how you record to how you promote your music. What do you think for you has been the biggest change for you in your career over the past, you know, 11 years?
For myself personally, or the music business, do you mean?
I mean, you can answer both, whatever suits your fancy.
Well, yeah, I mean, the music business has changed a lot since I started up. You know, the CD has died, the download has died, and streaming has taken over. But it's really exciting that way because, you know, I hear a song and I cannot be bothered to get into a record store personally. I hear it, I Shazam it, and I download it from, you know, from iTunes, and I keep it with me, and I really enjoy that. So the advances in the business have been fantastic. The digital world, the fact that I can speak directly to people and tell them my music's coming out rather than having to use my record label as my voice, which their voice is different from mine, I really enjoy too. Because otherwise, well, you know what? I just think I've been portrayed as a very different person by a record label than I am. So it's been really great to have that direct means of communication.
It is funny. I think I and a lot of other folks, you know, perhaps were mistaken, you know, at the beginning of your career when we thought that you were sort of a very serious, you know, sort of earnest singer-songwriter, which, you know, obviously you have, that is part of you, but at the same time you're a joker and you're very funny and you have a pop sensibility too that is really shining, I think, on the new record especially. So I think it's great that you're able to sort of present that to people and in an unfiltered way, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's funny because it's funny, you get portrayed a particular way, you know, marketed in a particular way, and sometimes don't have any control of that. And so it's been really nice, at least on this album as well, to put forward a different side of a character, to have irony and humor in songs. And then the label have been forced to accept that.
Last thing, and I was fascinated by this, and I don't mean to bring up something sad, but I read recently about how you were great friends with Carrie Fisher, and that she was the godmother to your child, and how some of your first album was recorded in her house. With that in mind, I was wondering if her passing perhaps influenced the new album in any fashion, if any of the music was inspired by her in any way.
No, she died at Christmas 2016, and I suppose I wrote the one final song, Time of Our Lives, which is really which is a different song. So no, none of the songs on this album, but you know, as a person, she's influenced me and my music every step of the way since I met her in 2002. And when she housed me in Los Angeles and has housed me ever since, it's been my home. And so I do feel marginally homeless now in Los Angeles, as I know a few other people do. But my first album is called Back to Bedlam because her house has been a madhouse of inspiration, and creativity. The pill that's on my first album on the disc itself of Back to Bedlam is Carrie's pill from her house that you will have read about in the news recently. She's a huge influence on me as a person. So not a song about her, but she's in all of them.
Well, it's been lovely chatting with you, and everyone make sure to check out James's new album, The Afterlove, and make sure to see him out on the road later on this year. So thank you so much again for taking the time, and have a great rest of the year.
It's a great pleasure. See you soon.
Thank you so much, James, for stopping by. Much success to you with the new album, which is out on March 24th. Again, it's called The Afterlove. And James will open for his pal Ed Sheeran on tour this year, starting June 29th, James himself will headline his own tour, I believe, starting in October, I think.
I hope that Ed and James hit the stage together, too, once in a while. I think that'd be super fun.
That kind of seems like it would probably happen.
Yeah, I actually saw Ed Sheeran and Rudimental was opening for them, and they had a song together.
Right.
Of course, they ended up hitting the stage together.
And Ed wrote a couple songs on
James' album.
Mm-hmm. So...
Yeah.
It kind of lends itself.
Yeah.
I think we are coming to the end of... No, wait!
Oh, wait!
It's time for the chart stat of the week. We did not forget. 25 years ago this week, Vanessa Williams got her first, and so far only, number one hit on the Billboard Hot 100 chart with Save the Best for Last.
Love that song so much.
You go and save.
It was like my favorite song when it came out.
Wow.
As a, I don't know, 10-year-old.
I was going to say, you were quite young.
Loved it.
The former Miss America became a surprisingly successful recording artist in the late 1980s with hits like The Right Stuff and Dreamin'. But she struck it super big with the inescapable hit Save the Best for Last. The ballad would spend 5 weeks atop the chart, beginning on the March 21st, 1992 dated list, and garner Williams a Grammy Award nomination for Record of the Year. The diva has since scored 7 more hits on the chart, including a pair of top tens in Love Is from Beverly Hills 90210.
Isn't that featuring
Brian McKnight? Yeah, it's Vanessa Williams and Brian McKnight. And, of course, Colors of the Wind from the movie Pocahontas.
Have you ever heard the wolf cry to the blue corn moon?
I have.
Is that what the line is?
I think it is.
I kind of love that song.
I was going to sing the next one, but I can't. So there you go. 25 years ago this week, Vanessa Williams topped the Hot 100 with Save the Best for Last. So, now we have reached the end of the show.
You saved the best for last.
I did.
The chart stat of the week.
I just went and saved the best for last.
You go and save the best for last.
Any parting words? What song should we go out on here?
I mean, should we just go out on Colors of the Wind?
We
actually just did a great ranking on Billboard.com of every song from the movies of Disney's Renaissance period. It was like
The Little Mermaid
1989
forward.
To 1999 or something like
that. Where did Colors of the Wind rank?
It actually, I think, was close, if not in the top 10. It might be like number 10.
Hmm.
Like, it had a really big staff, like, support system.
Wow.
Yeah, people, like, really fought for Colors of the Wind.
I'm interested in seeing this list.
Yeah, so definitely go to Billboard.com and check it out and listen to the beauty of Colors of the Wind as we leave you today.
See you guys next week.
Bye. With all the colors
of the wind. Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.